greatest WWE champion of all time.
I'm the whole
job. And I am the wrestling god.
Who among you has that one single ingredient who has enough ruthless aggression?
Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Ruthless Aggression Podcast. I'm your host, Hawkeye Jefferson. With me, as always, my cohort, my partner in crime. What else could we call you, Asher? My comrade?
Yeah, comrade, we could do that.
My fellow real American looks leeringly. Leeringly, that's a word.
Yeah, it is a word. I'm about as American as Antonio Cesaro.
How many languages do you speak?
I speak one language.
Well, it's English, so that's good enough for me.
Yeah, that's good enough for everybody else, too, apparently.
Apparently so. So, how are you doing this week, man? What you been up to?
Just, you know, school and shit. Like, I've got a bunch of tests and stuff coming up that I've got to get ready for. It's a bit of a drag, but that's life, I guess.
Yeah, well, hopefully this amazing pay-per-view that we watched could somewhat take your mind off of things.
Oh, yeah, it was so good.
Woo. So good, yeah. I don't know, actually, I watched part of this show, like, at work.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because I'm a waiter, and, like, I have the network and the app, so, like, one day we didn't have anything going on, and I'm like, oh, well, let's see what Backlash 2002 has to offer. And so I checked that out, like, while at work. And, yeah, I'm really awful at my job some days, you guys. Like, I'm really glad that, like, I did it before, like, we actually opened. Because if we had customers in there and I did it, like, I probably would have just fired myself.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, but this week, actually, I took to the show Twitter and just started tweeting random followers. So thanks to anybody that follows us and also listens to this, that put up with my bullshit this week.
They love your bullshit. That's why they tune in.
I hope so. And to that one guy that I was talking Steve Austin with, whose name escapes me at the moment, 2002 was an awful time to be a Steve Austin fan. Keep listening to this episode for more information. With that said, we should probably go ahead and get down to it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Backlash 2002, April 21st, 2002, from the Kemper Arena in Kansas City, Missouri, holds a pretty important distinction as, now I'll probably be wrong here, because you're talking to the guy that forgot that the draft episode was supposed to come before the Backlash episode, which leads to our draft episode coming tomorrow, so stay tuned for that. Also, bonus episode, we're doing double duty this week.
Yeah, got a hot shot of recording.
And, yeah, actually, I believe that this was the last American WWF pay-per-view, but we'll get to more on that later. From the Kemper Arena, as I probably already said, which has a pretty important distinction.
Go on.
It was the arena that hosted the Raw the night after the first Hell in a Cell, with the horrifying interview with the widow of Brian Pillman, who had just died like a couple days before.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Kemper Arena has a horrible history, and this, while not as bad as those awful other things,
is still pretty awful.
Not the best thing to happen in Kansas
yeah.
City. When you start out with an intro video, which I actually really dug, until, like, Hogan made, like, the WrestleMania 18 match with The Rock all about himself.
Yeah.
It was like, The Rock won the match, but I won my fans back, brother.
Brother, 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 brother.
He's the people's Hulk now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
That could have been a t-shirt, and it would have sold. But Triple H actually says that he doesn't want to crush a part of his childhood, which is a bit presumptuous on your part.
Didn't he say the same shit about The Undertaker in the build-up to their WrestleMania match?
I didn't have cable at the time because I was living in the dorms, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Oh, okay.
It sounds like something Triple H would say.
He's a real fan
but
like that.
He is. Hogan, actually, something I noted here, he called it the WWF Undisputed World Heavyweight Championship. So, your move, Authority.
Yeah.
You can't go around touting Orton as the first ever, can you? Hogan did it first, brother.
Brother.
Well, Hogan's back. Maybe he's here to take his championship back.
Oh, God, don't give them ideas.
They thought about it.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know,
and then they
thought about it.
Then they got Hogan's physical results, and they're like, we can't even put you in a battle royal. Which is really sad.
If it was TNA, they probably would have put the fucking title on him anyway.
Well, they did put him in a match with Sting in a cage. Which...
Because that's a good idea.
Yeah, which... To be honest, if I just, like... If we could get away with it, I would love to review something like that sometime. Just, like, as a random bonus episode. Like, here's some TNA.
Yeah, like, the bonus episodes would do. Like, I don't think we need to really adhere to the whole Ruthless Aggression era thing. I think we could basically do whatever. I mean, it's a bonus episode. It's for fun. So,
Well, we'll see what the fans have to say about it.
Yeah, hit us up on Twitter about it and suggest some episodes of wrestling for us to review.
At Ruthless Podcast.
Cheap plug.
We got to get that in there. Garrett Bischoff's clothing line follows us, you guys, as does St. Patrick. Like, how do you not want to get in on this?
That's right. We're so damn popular and successful that Garrett Bischoff's clothing line follows us.
And a literal saint.
Yeah. We are huge up there and up there with those pearly gates.
Indeed. And in Ireland in general, as I'm finding out, thanks to our stats.
We're going international. But, we're taking over, brothers. Baby.
Yeah. Like the BWO. Except our shirts fit. The Undisputed title belt, been introduced since Mania, which I love this title design. I really do. I miss it. Miss it sorely. And I think that's just going to be the most hurtful thing in a weird way through all of this. Because I get to watch my favorite title and then it's going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
At some point. In a fiery garbage can, I'm sure. That's how titles go away. Fiery garbage cans or rivers.
Yep.
So this was pretty quick paced because we just come right out of the video and into the first match, Kidman versus Tajiri for the Cruiserweight title.
Yeah, I love Kidman versus Tajiri.
Oh, I do too. Kidman's defending champion here. Tajiri has Torrie Wilson with him.
In some kind of geisha robe or something like that.
Yeah, it was weird. They were doing an angle where she was his girlfriend and he was a face, and then he turned heel by like doing this stuff. Like, put your titties away, and fans are like, boo! Yeah, so...
I actually thought she looked okay in it.
Yeah. Torrie Wilson is not an unattractive gal, so I don't think there's a whole lot you could do to ugly her up.
Yeah, unless you, like, give her, like a Vince McMahon mask to wear or something like that.
I don't know.
That might be a weird kind of fetish. I mean, I think Jerry the King Lawler might be into something like that.
We should ask him.
Does Jerry Lawler have a Twitter? Because if so, we should tweet that to him.
I think he does, actually.
Oh, God.
The people demand answers, King. So this is a SmackDown match, because as I noted, the draft happened since the last pay-per-view we reviewed.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so this is a SmackDown match, and you can tell during this match that Lawler really just does not give a fuck about anything that happens on SmackDown.
Unless he's like, puppies.
He's like, I'm not getting paid to know about this show. I show up to call Raw matches, you guys.
Was this before they had separate announced teams for pay-per-views? Like, apart from the Hispanic and the...
I'm sorry? No, this is actually, this was, before the concept of the Raw and SmackDown announced teams, which would happen when we got general managers that aren't Flair and McMahon.
Oh, okay.
So we're still a couple months away from that. I want to say the summer, like, Vengeance or so will be the first show with the split commentary, which I'm so looking forward to, Taz.
Yes.
Like, not for nothing, but this guy stands out as a pretty competent commentator during this time. Much better than Lawler.
He's hilarious, too.
He is. Everything's a rocket buster with that guy.
Rocket buster.
Yeah, also, I totally just stabbed myself while recording this episode.
Well, good job.
Yeah, good for me. It was right in the finger with, I think it was a paperclip, so...
I was fucking around with a pocket knife the other day, and I stabbed myself in the hand with it.
Well, hell, that's not good. We don't need to be trading war stories here, though.
We're hardcore. We've
seen some stuff and some things. I really like this match, though.
Yeah, this was good fun. I liked it. Tajiri gave me a kick boner in this match. It was awesome.
A kick boner?
A kick boner. A boner
would
for
you
kicks.
Like to okay, a boner for kicks.
Because, I mean, those kicks, man.
Hashtag kick boner.
Yeah. Trending worldwide.
We're going to start doing that now. Just random hashtags throughout the show. See how long it takes for people to get sick of that shit.
Yeah. See how long it takes for us to forget.
So, that's more likely.
Yeah.
By the end of the episode, I'll be like, remember that joke we started? Yeah, man, that was so long ago.
Hashtag forgotten joke.
So, these two worked like a really great pace. There was a lot of reversals. Tajiri was working, as you said, he was working the kicks. And Kidman was working high flying. It really created a great dynamic here.
Yeah.
But Lawler was, like, I noted here specifically that it was just really weird listening. Because, like, the main event, I don't can't remember if we brought it up last week. But the main event, when Triple H was beating up Stephanie, Lawler was like the voice of reason. Like, JR's like, oh, she deserves it for being in the ring. And Lawler's like, whoa, wait a second here, pal. Like, you can't just beat up a woman. Unless it's Mae Young, then yeah, totally do that. It's Jerry Lawler's school of reasoning. But yeah, and then here, you know, the here is just like all about, oh, you can't see Tori Wilson's body. Like, okay, Grandpa. Like, just tone it down a little bit. We're only in the first match of the night. You don't want to blow out of steam early.
Oh, God.
You know, they mentioned during the match, though, that Tajiri has a degree in economics, so that made me wonder if he actually has the educated feet.
That's a good point, actually. I want to... Did Tajiri and RVD ever mix it up?
Probably once or twice. Nothing that immediately jumps to mind.
I gotta see that if it happened.
If they did, I want to see it. And if anybody attends a JR Q&A, please waste your question on that in our name. Like, ask him if Tajiri's feet were educated since he had a degree. And was a kick man.
Wait, so if RVD's, like, left foot went to Harvard and his right foot went to Yale, where do you think Tajiri's feet went?
The School of Hard Knocks.
Both of them?
Both of them.
But that's not as hilarious to imagine.
They're deadlier as a team. Tajiri knows that.
Fair enough.
That's his strong suit. RVD's a pothead. He's a poor planner. He's like, he applied both of his feet to different schools. It was like, whoa, they got in different places. Time for me to cut them off. Now, as we discussed last week, he's definitely an action figure. He just popped them right off.
Yeah.
See you in 4 years, feet. Six for you, Harvard foot.
So he just walked around with one leg for 2 years and no legs before?
Yep.
That's right.
That's
he walked
RVD
around with no legs.
Done. Yeah. No, the two years where he didn't have the one foot was actually just covering... they covered for it with his ankle injury during his ECW TV title run.
Oh, okay. It's all lining up.
Yeah, see, like, his foot had to, like, go back and finish up a year. And he's like, oh, well, I broke my ankle, wink, wink. When in reality, it was just a pinata foot strapped to his leg.
Probably would have been more durable.
Probably. We got a really racist tall man joke, like, following JR noting... that Tajiri had a degree in economics. Like, Jerry said something to the effect of him being stupid enough to open a tall man shop in Japan.
Oh.
And I'm just like, ah, that's a bit much there. Bit like, too far.
Yeah, did we have to?
Did we really have to go there? But I guess so. That was kind of his thing.
Yeah, he was the guy that went there.
And no one liked it.
Yeah.
I specifically noted, though, that there was just one spot where Tajiri was using the bottom rope to choke out Kidman. And he goes to the outside and just levels him right in the head with a kick.
Oh, that was just beautiful. It was like...
Yeah.
The sound of it was nasty. It was like...
Dude
getting slapped with, like, a frying pan or something.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, Tajiri, I think, is going to be one of those guys that I didn't really appreciate at the time because I wasn't really, I guess, old enough to get his style. But now that, you know, I'm a little bit older, I'm really enjoying watching him.
Yeah, he's very, very good.
I actually loved it. There was a spot where he went for a baseball slide before, like, he just looked at the crowd and went, "Shap!" He was just so angry.
Yeah,
and I loved it.
He was pissed, like, just for no reason.
He was. It was also at this time I noted a Kurt Angle, "You suck" sign. Clever and classy in Kansas City, Missouri. Actually, I'm kind of ashamed because I laughed a little bit at it. So I'm like, I never thought of that pun, Kurt Angle.
Yeah, Kurt Angle.
All right, good on you.
Yeah, we can.
For being creative, at least.
Yeah, we can do that, I guess.
Tajiri tried for Tarantula after working Kidman's back a little bit, and it got blocked, but it didn't happen. Like, it just happened anyway.
Yeah.
And Kidman's like, nope, but Tajiri's like, yep, and there they were, which I love this spot. Like, I love that it's actually somewhat reemerged in various ways in the last few years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not exact, you know, it's not a legal spot. It's not something that you're going to get a pinfall, not going to get a submission for. But it's definitely something that pops the crowd, so. And
yeah,
that's what they were doing here. They were trying to get it going.
It's and stuff. It's, like, the Tarantula, I think Emma does it now.
I think so, yeah, which is awesome. Somebody's going to be out there like, no, it's actually AJ.
Ugh.
She's the answer to everything, you guys.
God, we could do a whole bloody show on that and, like, not have enough time to cover everything.
Not even, yeah. And, like, I don't even think we could be sarcastic enough to entirely convey that message.
Yeah.
Like, that would just take it out of us. We'd have to stop everything.
Yeah.
Just done after
like,
that.
There would just be no podcast after that.
Ever. And that'd be sad, so
we'd
don't want to do that,
you
guys.
You'd only have creepy AJ fans to blame for it.
So blame those guys.
Yeah. Fuck those
friends,
guys. Not
friends
that they'll get
don't
any
let
oh.
Friends don't let friends be creepy AJ Lee fans, you guys.
Right.
So there actually another spot that I really loved. Tajiri hit a German suplex and bridge combo.
Oh, that was so cool.
You want to actually explain it then, since you seem to really love it?
He kind of like. It was weird. He hits the German suplex and he does the usual bridge. It was a crazy bridge though. He was like right on top of his head and his bloody tippy toes. Anyways, like the referee's counting, he gets like a two count, and I think Kidman kicked out because the referee kind of started another count. Fucking Tajiri kind of bridges back over with his legs, so he's like.
So his stomach is up.
Yeah, his stomach is up at this point, and then he kind of flips over. And he's, like, trapping Kidman's legs with his own legs. And he's,
it was great.
Like, doing it. It was really, really cool.
Yeah, like, this is, I'm not, like, I actually feel like I might say this a few more times on this episode than I do normally. But this match is actually something I feel like it was actually a really good illustration of the potential, at least, of the cruiserweight division at
yeah.
the time. Like, they did a lot of really good stuff here. Like, that. They hit a BK bomb off the middle rope, like Kidman did.
Yeah.
It was only a damn near fall. Like, these guys were going after it. And it took the crowd a little while to get into it, which JR noted, which, come on. Do you really need to say, crowd's starting to get with this, like, a minute before the finish? As if, like, we didn't already notice, like, this crowd's dead as shit for this match, even though there's a lot of great stuff happening.
Yeah, this match was awesome. I loved it.
We found it.
Yes, by the end of it, they did too.
Yeah, which how could they not? We found out, though, another great paradox in wrestling. Kidman cannot powerbomb Tajiri. Because he tries, and he gets red mist for his efforts. Tajiri pins him for the title, 9-0-8. And, yeah, I really like this match. Afterwards, Cole talks to Tajiri, and Tajiri just speaks a lot of angry-sounding Japanese, which I'm sure was really tame.
Yeah.
And this actually made me sad that we didn't have DJ M on this week.
Yeah.
Because if he didn't know what he was saying, he
was
probably at least
being very polite, but it just sounded really angry because he's Japanese and he had just been fighting.
And he was speaking Japanese.
Yeah.
Like he was probably like, "Thank you to all these wonderful fans in Kansas City, Missouri, for allowing me to showcase my talents and winning this title." But like it sounded like "fuck everything."
Yeah.
More Japanesey.
Like, "I want to eat your children." Like, that's what it sounded like.
Which, honestly, if we had a heel say that, I would probably buy the t-shirt. Just saying.
Wasn't there a guy on NXT who in developmental recently who cut a promo that was basically that?
I think so.
It was a fucking Australian guy. Way to be. Way to
good job, Australia.
Bell. Mate. Fucking.
I want to see this now, because I recall it, but I don't remember it.
He said something about murdering babies or something like that.
Good old family fun.
Well, yeah.
Speaking
that's
of good old family fun, backstage we get the APA, and they meet up after this long period of like 2 weeks, where they've been drafted to opposite brands. Bradshaw's on Raw, Farouk is on SmackDown. And, like, while these guys are talking, the NWO music hits, and they're just like, Bradshaw's like, "Oh, man, I gotta go. Gotta go handle this. You know, they fucked up our office. I gotta go beat up Scott Hall now." It was a weird segment, because, like, they hugged and everything. Like they were just returning from, like, wars, but, like, they were on different wars. So they hadn't seen each other for a while.
Yeah.
But it had been, like, 2 weeks on different brands. Like, come on, guys.
Well, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder.
They probably traveled together to this show.
Yeah.
Just so that, it was an awkward segment.
Yeah.
To say the least. Another awkward thing, because we just jump right into Scott Hall versus Bradshaw. JR's first line of commentary for this part was, "Here comes the poison." But, like, he said it with, like, no real enthusiasm or anything. Like, really, instead of, like, being, like, trying to convey a storyline, it's like, "Oh, man, this match is gonna suck."
Well, I was thinking the same thing, honestly.
Yes.
Like,
especially when
I'm not gonna pretend to be enthusiastic about this NWO run, because it's just been painful so far.
And we've only had two shows of it. This is the third show with the NWO. And already we've had Hogan leave, Nash has been suspended indefinitely in kayfabe, X-Pac has joined. Like, it doesn't work, and X-Pac is wearing Kane's mask because the NWO took Kane out a few weeks prior. And here comes Texas's favorite potato farmer, Bradshaw. Yeah,
they ought to build this fucking guy from Idaho.
They really should. He looked ready to fight coming out, and boy was he ever. But King spends most of the early part of this match asking JR if he thinks Kane has spare masks, and JR says that he thinks that X-Pac wearing the mask is an improvement, which I'm inclined to agree with.
Yeah.
So, once again, JR makes a damn good point. Like, this match had a really weird start, because, like, Bradshaw's in the ring with Scott Hall, and then X-Pac just decides, "I'm gonna get in the ring, too." And they're like, it's almost like they're trying to do the Shield style, like, circling, but there's only two of them, so Bradshaw's like, "You're not fucking getting around me."
Like, that's not how it works.
Not at all. And then fucking Farouk came out. So here we go, brand interaction, not even a month into the draft. They're gonna hype it up to be a huge thing here in, like, a year in the timeline. So, we really need to make note of that now. Not even a month into the draft, we had the APA reuniting on pay-per-view. Because Bradshaw apparently could not handle X-Pac and Scott Hall on his own. It did give us a huge APA chant, though, so I mean, I guess we are kind of underestimating just how over the concept of the APA working together is.
Well, the crowd loves them. I mean, it's a.
Well,
good,
I love them.
Yeah, they're a good tag team. They go back a long way. Has the APA ever had a breakup angle?
Not that I can think of. No, I think every time that they've broke it up, it's just kind of been a thing where they just went their separate ways.
Are they the only team in the history of the WWE that's ever had that?
Come to think of it, I think so, actually. Unless somebody can specifically note a time where they did a breakup angle, I don't remember them like being anything but friends in the entire WWE canon.
It's kind of nice.
It is.
Especially, but it's also interesting when you consider JBL is probably a huge racist.
And probably a huge dick in real life.
I mean, like, the segment, are we going to get to see this segment, the one where he chases the Mexicans back across the border?
Actually, I was thinking, if I can find the full episode of SmackDown somewhere out there, we will probably take a look at a couple episodes as bonus episodes here in a few months, I guess, would be.
Yeah.
A couple years in the timeline. But yeah, I actually do want to look at some of that JBL stuff because, like, a lot of it, like, going back is just really, like, a huge head-scratcher on the part of everyone involved.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing I noted, though, is this crowd went immediately from an APA chant to just, like, cheering for Bradshaw beating the hell out of Scott Hall, which basically started from the moment Hall threw his toothpick at Bradshaw and laughed.
Yeah.
And then Bradshaw just started stiffing the hell out of him.
This match was very slow and plodding, though, like.
It was a lot of stiffing. But they rolled immediately from a huge APA chant into cheering for Bradshaw, into just an X-Pac sucks chant.
That's logical progression.
It was. And so, like, another logical progression here, we went to the outside, and Hall actually just took a quick beating from Farouk, who was hanging around, as I noted. But, like, nothing is done about this. And then, like, X-Pac comes around the ring, and he gets beat the fuck up, too.
Yeah.
Like I noted here, though, that Bradshaw's style in this match was basically club, punch, chop, throw this fucker, near fall, repeat.
Yeah.
Which, if it works for you.
Yeah, well, I don't think he showed up expecting to have to work a lot, and he just kind of went out there and was like, I'm going to beat the fuck out of Scott Hall.
Well, working with Scott Hall at this time period just was not a dream. Like, we know about him, you know, doing much better now, and it's excellent because I've always been a huge Scott Hall fan. I mean, I was, you know, NWO fan when I was a little kid, which makes this way more fucking painful for me than it should be. But, it was just, Hall was not pleasant to watch at this time, and I can imagine he was way worse to have to fucking work with. And it showed, because he was just acting like this match was a joke. And, actually my favorite part of this match, JR busted out his, cryptic line for this match sucks when he said, well, this one is bowling shoe ugly. And Bradshaw, like, hit Hall with a big boot at the same time. And JR, like, insinuated that if, like, Bradshaw keeps doing that, Hall will shit himself. Like, he said something about things coming out of other orifices for Scott Hall. And I was like, do you mean, like, he'd shit himself, JR? That's weird.
I love how King was like, King acted like the word orifice was like the dirtiest word he'd ever heard.
You said orifice.
Did you hear him?
I did, yeah. It was awful. Like, King is really starting to hit new lows already. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
Not excited about future shows with this. There was just an insane clothesline from Hell to Hall. But X-Pac put Hall's foot on the ropes and slapped Bradshaw, which is a fucking stupid idea.
Yeah.
So Bradshaw and Farouk chase him. Farouk chases him into a punch from Bradshaw. And then Bradshaw, well, then Farouk catches him, runs him back first into a post. While all this is happening, Scott Hall hits Bradshaw with a low blow, four roll up, 5:43. And it was weird because, like, the first few minutes of this match, I'm thinking, well, this is just a fucking burial. Because Hall was getting no offense. Like, he got his little toothpick spot in, and then Bradshaw proceeded to beat the ever-loving fuck out of this guy for, like, the first half of the match. And then Hall barely got a little bit of a comeback before the shenanigans started. And then, like, all of a sudden, oh, he won.
I wonder if it might have been a timing issue with this match.
Possibly. I don't know. It was just, it was weird. It wasn't fun. Yeah, I was disappointed with this match, though, because I was actually kind of excited to see, like, just these two guys slug it out. Because Bradshaw, you know, we've got a reputation at this point of just being a guy that's going to get in there and stiff the hell out of whoever he's working with. And Scott Hall, not exactly a guy that's got a reputation for that sort of thing, but he's not going to be a guy that's going to let somebody take liberties with him. So I was kind of hoping that, like, Bradshaw would try to, like, potato him a few times, and Hall would just be like, fuck this shit, and kind of let loose on Bradshaw, and we'd get, like, Clash of the Titans. But no, it was this weirdly booked fucking mess, and it was not good. And I can't stress enough how much I did not like this match.
Yeah, it was...
Asher?
It wasn't all that good at all. Like, but I don't... Did anyone really expect, like, work rate from this match? Seriously?
Oh, no, not at all. But we could have at least gotten some acceptable brawling.
Yeah, like... was it like a mini lumberjack match or something? Seriously,
no.
Like...
No, Mike Chioda just didn't give a fuck.
Ah, yeah, fair enough. It's like, fucking Farouk... I noted at one point, fucking Farouk just punches Scott Hall right in the fucking face.
Yeah,
and
right in the mouth.
Like, well, shit happens.
I'll allow it. Mike Chioda was like referee Mills Lane... Well, Judge Mills Lane from Celebrity Deathmatch. Like, everything that happened. I'll allow it. The Chioda School of Refing, which I can appreciate.
Yeah.
And we somewhat get a reappearance of that with Flair later, but we'll get to that. And actually, speaking of Ric Flair, backstage we get Vince and Ric... Well, Vince walks into Ric Flair's office. Flair's hanging out with Arn Anderson. Flair's got on, you know, he's getting ready for his refereeing gig later. And Flair just immediately, what do you want? Get the fuck out of here. Woo! And Vince is, he's talking about how he's starting to like Flair's style. And he's saying, oh, he's, that Flair's starting to feel the heat as an owner. And Vince is confused about why Flair made himself the ref for Austin and Taker, which I was too, because to me that just screams screw job.
Yeah.
And why would you put your heel in that position, you guys? But,
because shades of gray.
The shades of gray. Tweeners. It was a weird segment, but it was great. With Flair at his retort with, you don't know me. You don't know anything about me. I'll never be like you, Dad. I mean, Vince. Okay, that last part didn't happen. But Flair was just going off about how Vince doesn't know him. He doesn't know anything about him. And Vince just offers Flair a handshake while just wearing the corniest grin. I'm going to have to try to grab a screen grab of this when this show gets re-added to the WWE Network, because it's gone for some reason. It's weird. But Vince just has the courteous grin, and he offers Flair a handshake. Flair won't fucking take it, so Vince just leaves. And that's the end of that.
Mm.
Yeah. Next match, we get women's title on the line. Trish Stratus versus Jazz, kind of somewhat a rehash of something we've already seen.
Pretty sure we've seen some variation of this match every single show we've done for this podcast.
Except for Vengeance.
What happened on Vengeance with the women's title?
I don't remember, but I don't think it involved Jazz. I think it was Trish and Ivory. Or Trish and somebody.
Trish and Jacqueline, I think.
Oh, there we go. Something like that. Anybody that's listening is probably just cursing their radio. Like, they fucking reviewed that like a month ago and they don't remember. Anyway, it was a weird start for this because, like, neither of the actual competitors came out. It was just like Molly Holly, who we loved as Mighty Molly last week. And this week, she's gone an entire gimmick change.
Her gimmick is and, she's a virgin, I guess?
Yeah, like she's pure and clean, and nobody wants to see titties. They want purity, damn it. And Trish
don't want
actually,
purity. I want to see some titties.
Okay, easy there, Lawler. So, actually, Trish beat Molly for this title shot. And Molly wants the title because she tried to win and didn't work out for her. And so, well, she tried to cheat and didn't work out. Trish cheated and she won. So, actually, solid logic. She should be in this match.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that she should be rewarded for cheating, but neither should Trish.
Maybe she should have a triple threat then.
Maybe. Another triple threat. So actually, Trish comes down to confront Molly, and Molly just blasts her right in the mouth with the microphone and throws her outside. And, like, Jazz comes out and is, like, watching, and Molly just throws Trish into the steps, and Lil Nate is finally like, okay, you gotta get the fuck out of here. Like, everything else flew until that. He's like, okay, that's too much.
Yeah.
So Jazz just immediately worked the back with lots of whips, slams, suplexes, just your general, you know, kind of basic, kind of boring women's match that we got at this time.
Yeah.
JR,
it was
though,
much special. It was.
Yeah. I really like watching Jazz, but I feel like she was somewhat wasted in this match. Like,
yeah.
She was showing a lot of flashes of brilliance, and Trish wasn't really that good at this point.
Yeah, I will say this with Trish, though. She does throw a pretty mean kick.
Oh, definitely. JR called Jazz Mike Tyson-like, which is fucking weird to me. Don't do that, JR. Just don't.
That's a bit
don't.
Weird.
It is. Although, there was a great boxing combo from Jazz that Trish just countered with a sloppy chick kick for the near fall before she actually went into the corner and hit Stratosphere, which is a move that kind of would go away in the next few years. Which I don't blame her, because this move is fucking ridiculous. Do you know what I'm talking about here, Asher?
I do not.
Okay, do you know the spot where Trish chopped Jazz into the corner?
Yeah.
And then she sat her on the top.
Mm-hmm.
And then she used the bottom rope to prop herself up, and then used her ankles to pull Jazz off the top rope.
Oh, yeah.
That goofy-ass move.
The fuck? That's a finisher?
Yeah. It was kind of more of a signature move. Like, it was classified as a signature in the SmackDown games, and that's good enough for me.
Weird.
We actually did get a really nice neckbreaker from Trish, though. But Jazz just kicked Trish right in the fucking chest and took over again with a power, and hit a powerbomb that, dear God. I was actually kind of concerned for Trish's safety after that one, because it looked just crisp.
Yeah, it was a bit, yeah.
It was a bit much.
Just a bit.
But, just a bit. Trish tried for Stratisfaction, but ended up taking a back suplex for a near fall, which led into just the worst goddamn Boston Crab I've ever seen. And
yeah,
I hate
it. Pretty terrible.
But Jazz does have a better STF than Cena, and I'm not saying that from a smarkish point of view. It's fucking true, you guys.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
I noted that as well. It was really cool.
Yeah, she's really great
it
when she.
Painful.
You know, it did, definitely. Trish tapped to this, actually, and Jazz retained the title, 4 minutes, 27 seconds. Some guy, who I just noted as being some dork, tries to interview Jazz. He stumbles over his words, and she just, like, looks at him and walks, like, Jazz uses mean look. Interviewer is intimidated. Wild interviewer fled.
Hmm?
Like, that was the whole ending segment, which I kind of liked. Like, Jazz didn't really need to be a diva that talked. Although
yeah, well,
this is the time before they really called them divas.
She did all the talking in the ring.
That's a promo.
Mm-hmm.
Like a commercial, I mean, not like an actual promo, because that'd be an awful promo. Which, speaking
she
of awful,
in the ring.
I let my words do my talking. That didn't even make sense what you said.
So
that's a promo. I want to hear just an entirely random, bizarre wrestler like that. Like, somebody, like, comes to the ring like, I don't need to prove anything to you people with my words. I let my actions do my proving, and my words do my speaking.
What?
Exactly. $1 million idea, potentially, maybe. Get on this, TNA. It's a good idea, Dixie, I promise. Really good, I swear.
She'll probably be like, well, if you say so.
Implying that fucking Dixie Carter is sitting in her office in Nashville, like, oh, wonder what those Ruthless Aggression boys are up to this week.
Oh, God.
I love that Asher. He's got the sexiest accent.
I wonder if I could get a contract.
Probably, but you'd have to do music.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, Asher the sound guy for TNA.
That's a joke nobody's going to get.
Exactly. Hooray for inside jokes on the show. This episode's going off the rails in a hurry, and I actually kind of like it. Next up, we get a video where we find out Paul Heyman is a goddamn pervert.
Yeah, this was...
Yeah, like, he was handling, like, Lita's thong, and, like, he offered her sex in exchange for Brock not killing Matt Hardy. And by Brock, I mean Brock Lesnar, who I'm super excited for the debut of on this show. And she just killed him. Mm. Like, well, she just slapped him. And so, like, that was basically the end for Matt Hardy for a little bit.
Way to go, Lita.
Way to go. You killed Matt Hardy.
Thank you. You did us a
favor. So many ways. Yes, thank you so much for that, Lita. You're awesome. So Heyman actually brought Lita's underwear out on the Raw stage. Matt Hardy tried to attack him, but ended up taking an F5 on the stage that looked just holy shit. Right?
It looked like it killed him.
It did. Lawler legitimately made my skin crawl here, though.
What did he
when
say?
When he said, I've handled a thong or two in my day, but watching Paul Heyman do it is sickening.
Ugh.
Ugh. Just that, oh, the Hank Hill, just, ugh. I was almost struck deaf by hearing that shit. Like, get it together, man. This was the Paul Heyman block of this show, though. Because we went from that video about Paul Heyman to a backstage segment with Heyman getting Lesnar just hyped up for this match. And Lesnar...
One, real quick, like, I loved how, this promo, this segment starts with, like, it's like a shot of Brock Lesnar's tattoo and he's kind of flexing his back and Heyman's talking. It would almost look like it was meant to be Brock Lesnar's tattoo that was talking.
Oh, man, Brock Lesnar with the talking tattoo. Oh, if he had gone to WCW, that would have happened. Oh, man. You just shit out a million-dollar idea right here, Asher. I noted that Lesnar looked like a young, fresh-faced killing machine here. The Minnesota murder machine not quite looking like a wild mountain man yet.
I think his wild mountain man look is more dangerous looking, actually.
It is, definitely. Like, this guy, like, he looked like a freshman in college. Like just a jacked one. Yeah, like a super jacked freshman, but he still looked really young. So I actually just jumped, boom, right into this match. Jeff Hardy with Lita versus Brock Lesnar with Paul Heyman. This is actually the first time on pay-per-view we get Jeff Hardy coming out, painted up with the goofy shit on his face. And, like, it was really great here, though, because Lita came out. They were doing the blacklight entrance with Jeff wearing the gear that glowed. He painted his face to glow. And, like, Lita had on, like, a white jacket.
Yeah.
And, like, you could tell, like, she kind of didn't really know, like, what she was supposed to be doing, like, with the black light. Like, nobody could really see me, so, like, I'll just move my jacket around a little bit.
Yeah.
And that's what it looked like to me, at least. Then this was the start of the end for Jeff.
Yeah.
At least for me. Like, I love the Hardy Boys, but I've never really loved either of them on their own. And this was kind of like when Jeff started taking a direction that I never really got behind. But we'll get to that later on, because we've got a few more months of this goofy-ass not-giving-a-fuck Jeff Hardy.
Oh.
I'm excited. Right?
Yeah.
And then we've got Lesnar coming out to generic music with a generic Titantron that just... It keeps showing the design of his tattoo... Him murdering people with F5s and just Brock Lesnar in big gold, like, block print.
Yeah.
Like, it was wonderful. And he just had the most generic music. Obviously, this is his first month, really, with the company. And like, you could tell, though, that this was them saying, okay, this guy's going to be a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
Because, like, this was, well, this was his first actual official match on WWF television. And really, the story early on was Jeff was trying to stay away from Lesnar, and Lesnar was trying to kill him.
It was scary.
Yeah,
it
like,
was
I
really
was...
scary. Like, I would not want to be, like, even though it's worked and everything, I would not want to be Jeff Hardy in this situation, because Brock was
no.
just...
Yeah, like,
you
I
talk about
I make
JBL, a... or you talk about Bradshaw handing out potatoes, fucking hell.
Oh my god, yeah, like, it just, I make a lot of jokes at Jeff Hardy's expense, but this was kind of uncomfortable to watch at some spots, because, like, I literally just stopped taking notes at one point in this match and just watched in awe as, like, just like all this match was just Lesnar throwing Hardy, like, around everywhere. He's like, okay, I'm going to throw him across the ring. Then I'm going to go pick him up, then I'm going to slam him. Then I'm going to hit him a few times. And then I'm going to throw him across the goddamn ring again. It was just hard. It was... savage.
By the end of this match, I was like, stop it, Brock. He's already dead.
Just get... No! He's finished. Stop. That man's got a family, goddammit! And I loved, though, the one thing I did have to note... One of the things I did have to note for this match was I loved Heyman yelling on the outside. Because, like, he kept yelling stuff like... This is your fault, Lita. You did this. Like, you wouldn't fuck me, so Jeff has to die. Like, okay, that's a little bit extreme, but okay. I thought he was doing all right work outside. And then we actually, Jeff got a little bit of a comeback. He had a will-o'-the-wisp followed by a jawbreaker.
Whisper in the Wind?
Whisper in the Wind, yeah, the will-o'-the-wisp. Sorry, I watched, like, Lockdown right before I watched this, like the start of this show, and I was, honestly, I was kind of in a mood to see Jeff Hardy get beat up when I watched this.
Yeah,
and I think that was just a little Freudian slip on my end.
Yeah.
He had his patented leg drop to the dick, though, and then a swanton for a near fall, and Lesnar just muscled him off with this. Like, nope, not happening today.
Fuck that.
Yeah, this throw almost killed referee Teddy Long with Jeff Hardy. Holla, holla, holla. So Jeff's response to Hardy kicking out, though, is, I'm going to go get a chair.
Mm-hmm.
And Lesnar says nope to that, too, and hits him with an F5. Like, he lands right next to the chair, and Jeff Hardy's like, JR's like, Jeff Hardy landed face first on that chair with that F5. No, he fucking didn't, and the replay very clearly showed it, JR.
Maybe he was supposed to land on it, and they just didn't know what to do, considering he didn't.
Considering. It was great, though, because, actually, Lesnar goes for the pin here, and you hear Heyman yelling on the outside, don't pin him, hurt him, which I thought added this really great dimension to Lesnar's character at the time.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't interested in just winning matches. Like, he was trying to hurt people, and holy shit, the 3 power bombs that we get to end this match.
Ouch.
Yeah, like, this is another instance. If you're okay with watching, like, a wild animal, like, maul an action figure for, like, 5.5 minutes until referee Teddy Long says, that's enough, playa.
This match is for you.
This match is for you. Like, I don't even think we can accurately convey, like, what happened here. Because it really was just... Jeff Hardy got beat the fuck up, and Lesnar looked like a monster on a rampage.
And it would continue.
Yeah, it would continue for many, many months, and we'll get to that later. But now we've got Edge versus Kurt Angle, which is a match actually I was really excited for.
Yeah, this was cool.
Because I've seen this match before. So I knew what to expect here. But one thing I hadn't seen was the video package beforehand, which was just probably my favorite one that we've seen so far on the show.
Yeah, it was very good. I liked it a lot.
Like, it really did just encompass everything about this feud.
The segment with the pictures.
The Wayne's World bit. Yes, that was amazing. Angle was holding up picture. Well, Edge gave Angle pictures, and Angle was holding them up to look at them. And on the back, it said things like, "I suck. It's true."
P.S. I have no testicles.
P.S. I have no testicles. Yes, it was just Wayne's World to a T, and I loved it. But there was this one really brutal-looking bit, though, where Angle hit an Angle slam on Edge on the concrete where, holy shit.
Yeah.
Holy shit. No wonder this guy retired for neck problems, because, yeah. With some of the stuff we've seen just this far in, like, holy crap. And there's so much more to come. But we got the most disturbing sign I think we've seen yet on the show.
With this match. Gold dust raped my dad?
That was hilarious. This one said Angle sucks, and for some reason it had a hairy ass and a thong, it looked like.
What?
I don't know. This is another thing I'm going to have to try to screen cap. Like, we've got to get a picture of the Vince McMahon cheesy grin and the thong Angle sucks sign. So, yeah, we'll get on that, ruffians. That's what I think I'm going to call our fan base. Unless you guys have a better idea on what you want to be called. Ruffians it is for the time being. Edge was ridiculously over yet again, and his entrance was just perfectly timed. It's something I just noticed here, because this was actually one of the first... Well, this was the first show that I've got to see where... He didn't have the edited music, and we had a normal-sized entryway.
Yeah.
So, like, he actually perfectly timed it with the music, which I thought was a nice touch.
I love it when those little timing bits work out well.
Definitely. We got a lot of really great heel work from Angle here. Is there anything specifically you want to talk about in this match? Because, overall, it was just amazing. We're going to spend, like, a fucking hour and a half talking about just this if we try to go through everything. So, any specific highlights for you?
There was Edge hit a German suplex on Angle, and it looked like Angle landed on his head. Did you catch that?
Oh, yeah.
That looked, ooh.
Yeah, that was not pleasant looking. It was, like, you could kind of see why Edge didn't work suplexes like that, because he muscles Angle up and dumps him right on his head.
It was uncomfortable to watch.
It was, definitely. This was actually, he avoided an Angle slam before that. And Angle, like, just was immediately back up and into things. Like, he took a crossbody to the, like, he took a backdrop to the outside, followed by a crossbody to the top from Edge, like, immediately after getting dumped on his head. Like, this man was a fucking machine in this match.
Kurt Angle's a machine in general, like. The guy has kept going, and he's only just stopped and taken a break.
Yeah, which he deserves. Like, he should just... Like, I would be okay with Kurt Angle retiring right now.
Yeah, he could retire, and he'd have nothing to be ashamed of.
Nothing at all. Hopefully he's using some of his break to listen to this show. Unlikely, and he takes our advice. If so, you're welcome, Kurt.
We love
and
you, Kurt. We don't want you to die for TNA.
Angle, Olympic gold. Woo!
Woo!
We say that to each other, like, in between recordings of the show, like, it's become a little bit much, like, how much we love Kurt Angle from this time period.
It's just like a general statement of joy.
It is. Edge had his working boots on tonight, though, and I'm really starting to love him from this time period, too, because up until we really got going on this, like, my favorite time period for Edge was, the Rated R Superstar time, at least as a singles competitor. Mm-hmm. But now it's really like I'm really starting to see a lot of the components that would go into making Edge kind of that megastar main eventer. And he was a blast to watch in this match. I mean, he hit a belly to belly over the head suplex where he just tossed Angle, and it looked better than most suplexes you'll see from guys that don't normally bust them out.
Yeah. Speaking of belly-to-belly suplexes, like, I cannot express how much I love the top rope belly-to-belly spot.
Oh, the run-out suplex.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite spots ever. I'm always
It is, and we actually got that in this match.
Yeah, we did.
Which was fantastic. Actually, the finish for this match was really great. because they traded counters for a little bit. Then Angle hit an Angle Slam for a near fall, and he actually had tried for an ankle lock a few minutes before, but the straps weren't down, so his powers weren't activated. So this time he remembers, he pulls the straps down, but Edge just rolls Angle up for a near fall. So Angle gets a chair. He does one of my personal favorite, you know, heel anger spots, where he goes for the chair shot and he whacks the top rope and it bounces back and hits him in the face.
It was nasty, that one.
It was pretty nasty looking. So Edge gets an Edge-O-Matic for the near fall, which leads into a spear attempt, where Angle just blocked it by just going full on and kicking Edge in the chest.
Nah, he kneed him in the face, dude.
Oh, he did? I thought it was
yeah.
a kick to the chest.
Lord,
that's even worse.
I wasn't quite sure what had happened, so I watched the replay very carefully. And, yeah, he just brought his knee up right in Edge's face.
Ugh, that's even worse.
And, like, when this you ledge... consider the fact that Edge was going for a spear. So
yeah.
He's, like, he's running. And, I don't think Angle just kind of, like, daintily lifted his leg up to do it either. I mean, he really caught the guy with the fucking knee.
Yeah, that was, that's even worse now, because the sound off of this was insane.
Yeah.
Like, it sounded like, it was another one of those instances where it just sounded like somebody getting, you know, waffled with something. Hmm. And, Angle gets an Angle Slam, though, for the pinfall, 13-25. Holy shit, what a match.
You need to see
I was
this
really
one.
Disappointed when it ended. And
yeah.
I can't explain that enough, you guys.
I would have loved to have seen these guys get, like, 20 minutes.
Well, actually, we're going to get a little bit more from these guys throughout the rest of 2002.
Awesome.
And actually into 2003 some. So, lots more goodness to look forward to there.
Sweet.
Yeah, this match ended, though. Everybody got the hell out of the ring. And Jericho's music hit, and JR was really confused about it. And there was a lot of Jericho is a has-been signs, which apparently if you lose the title and then a month later are not booked on Backlash... Your has-been, which I guess that makes sense, because he's not good enough for Backlash. I mean, come on. Backlash. So yeah, this was a really weird segment. It's like Jericho came out and was just like, yeah, I was the champion last month, and now I'm not booked on the show. What the fuck? And then, like, they're just like, okay, Jericho, you got to get out of here now. And he's like, okay. And that took us backstage to Arn, Ric Flair, and The Undertaker, because Flair and Arn were talking, and Undertaker just walks in and looks at them. Like, just looks at both of them.
Yeah.
And then he walks out. And that was this segment. Like, this segment was The Undertaker staring at people.
That needs to be, like, we need to have that segment, like, on Raw next week.
We'd have that segment on Raw every week.
Undertaker just looking at people.
Oh, it could be one of the new bumper programs for the WWE Network. Like, in between programs, you could get random 24/7 hardcore title matches.
Yes.
Idea that we had last week. If you missed it, go check it out. And then you could have a segment of Undertaker staring at people. The Undertaker stares at things, a WWE Network original.
Yeah.
Like, you just have, you have the shot, like, of, like, a bunch of, like, bunnies, like, at a pet store. And then, like, you cut, and it's, like, the Undertaker standing in the pet store, like, staring
He's
at him.
He's in, like, full gear as well.
Full gear. And you cut to the bunnies.
With
and,
the
like,
hood.
They're kind of hopping around. And then it cuts back to the Undertaker, and he's got the hood up, and his eyes rolled back.
Yeah.
And then, like, that's the end of it. And then, like, you cut to the next one, it's like... You see some clothes going in the laundry, in the dryer, and it cuts to the Undertaker. He's standing there in the laundromat, full gear, staring at the laundry. Cuts back to the laundry. It's still going. Cut back to the Undertaker. Hood up. Eyes rolled back. Cut back to the dryer. The power of the dark side.
And then, like, lightning strikes the door and opens the dryer.
Yes. But then he has to fold it himself, because even the Undertaker is not that good.
Doesn't he have druids for that?
Druids do his housework. That's why Michelle Poole buried him.
Yes.
He looks like Heisenberg, and he has personal druids.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, so next matchup, we got Intercontinental Championship on the line. RVD is defending against another debut for this show, Eddie Guerrero.
Latino.
I love Eddie Guerrero. And it's good to see him back. For those of you that aren't aware, this was Eddie's kind of big return from when he had been released for his drug use to get clean. And he actually went and worked indies. There's a fantastic match out there that you can find. Rey Mysterio versus Eddie versus CM Punk from, I think it was early 2002.
On the indies.
Yeah, it was a great match. And so Eddie actually, he got himself clean, kind of had proven himself again, and had been re-signed and returned. So this is, like I said, our first Eddie Guerrero match on the show. I'm really great, really glad to see him because he and RVD always are fun to watch together.
Yeah.
Like, this one was really fast-paced and really fun. And when Eddie started working kind of that slower heel style, it didn't really slow down, so to speak. Like, there was still enough going on that this match never really dragged.
Yeah.
Although I did have to note a couple times that RVD was just like there was a few times where he just kind of screamed in this match. Like, he hit a sidekick and was like, yeah!
Woo! That was sick, bro. That was rad.
RVD, Yukon Gold. Woo!
Woo! Wait, what?
Strain of weed.
Oh, okay.
There was like four people that caught that joke immediately. And then, like, they were immediately like, ah, he fucking ruined it. Anyway, we got a weird variation on Rolling Thunder early on in this match, where he kind of did like a handspring moonsault instead, which they called it Rolling Thunder, so that's what I noted it as. I actually kind of dug it, though. Should have happened a little bit more often.
Yeah.
RVD is one of those few talents that can actually pull off, you know, incorporating that Muda style, you know, handspring into their offense.
A lot of people try, and it just doesn't work.
No, definitely not. Eddie got a couple of near falls, though, before RVD sent him to the outside and hit a moonsault from the apron, which was just great looking.
Yeah.
And then that set up for a guillotine leg drop over the barricade, which just never looks like a fun time. Like, it never looks like anything I want to have happen to me.
Yeah,
so really,
like even taking it, like even knowing it's a work and everything, even taking it would just be.
Yeah, just a big thumbs up to anybody willing to.
There's nowhere for
yeah.
you to go, except for
even
your
though that
like,
barricade
neck
is padded.
And spine to just, yeah, there's just nowhere for you to go.
It's not fun. Back inside the ring, though, RVD goes for legitimate Rolling Thunder, and Eddie just like, nope, gonna put my knees up. And Eddie actually started using a lot of technical, you know, kind of mat stuff at this point, which actually at this point I realized Eddie was kind of close to Regal, except he used more speed than power. But
yeah.
You can see a lot of similarities in their work in matches like this, including this incredible surfboard spot that Eddie gets RVD
in.
Oh,
fucking hell, this was...
He almost bit him in half backwards.
Yeah, I was surprised his spine didn't just...
Yeah, it was not great looking. But at this point, though, I had to be distracted by these fucking assholes in the crowd. There was three of them that were facing
were
the
doing?
Camera all night. And at this point, like, I finally noticed them. They kept standing up and drawing attention to themselves.
There's
For no reason other than we're on camera. Like... If you're not that into the show, maybe you shouldn't have come to the show, guys. Just saying.
Well, you know the old expression. They paid for their tickets, so they have a right to,
Okay, well,
yeah.
I paid to watch this pay-per-view, and I have a right to not be distracted by dick fucks in the crowd.
That is a very fair point.
Yeah. I paid my $9.99 a month, goddammit. So then we get a gory special... Which is one of my favorite submissions.
Yeah. There was a lot of really great submission work from Eddie in this match.
There was. Actually, he turned it into a roll-up, which I did. Like, I had to rewind it to see how that worked, and I still didn't get it. Like, it was just Yeah, it was bizarre. And Eddie actually, he did, we mentioned it, Angle doing the run-up superplex in the last match. Eddie does a run-up hurricanrana in this one.
It was awesome.
Yeah, that was just spectacular looking. And then he hit a vertical suplex, which I thought we were about to get fucking Three Amigos because he popped the hips. But no, he turned into a back suplex, which I actually thought was a pretty cool variation. RVD stopped a frog splash attempt, though. Hits a sunset flip powerbomb off the top rope for a near fall. Eddie tries to use the title belt. RVD takes it away, but hits Tim White on accident, which poor Tim White. This is our next to last show with him, and I'm going to be sad to see him go.
What happened to him?
Oh, you will find out on, not next week, but the week after. Shit, I just let the cat out of the bag, I guess. You'll find out when we do the Judgment Day review, whenever that may be. Eddie hits a neckbreaker on the belt for Frog Splash to win the match and the title in 11:43. And this is actually another one of those where I would have been okay with it going, you know, longer than it did.
Yeah. I mean, considering... Like, did we really need almost half an hour of Undertaker and Stone Cold and fucking Flair in his red fucking shoes?
No.
Like,
this match could...
We did not need that.
Like, this match and Angle and Edge were both matches that I thought could have easily gone just a little bit longer and been just that much better.
Yeah.
But the excellent work, nonetheless. So, we just... Boom, jump right into the next video for the next match. We get Steve Austin versus The Undertaker with Ric Flair as the
and
special referee.
And his red
referee.
Shoes. His red fucking shoes.
His Pope shoes, as I noted. So basically the storyline for this is Taker wanted to be the number one contender, and so did Austin. And so, like, Undertaker won a match, and Austin won a match, and then Flair's like, okay... You guys will fight each other at the pay-per-view to decide who the number one contender is. And, like, basically the rest of it was Undertaker hates Ric Flair, but Ric Flair drafted The Undertaker. And Steve Austin won't fucking stop stunning Ric Flair.
Like, Steve Austin he's not going to win Employee of the Month if he keeps assaulting his bosses.
Well, here in a couple months, he's not going to be winning Employee of anything.
Oh...
Yeah, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. I actually didn't realize how long they used Roland for.
The version of the show that I saw, he didn't have that theme.
He did on the network version, which is the pay-per-view version. So yeah, he used Roland for this damn long. And also something I noted, his entrance was significantly shorter in this time, which I'm okay with. Not an hour and a half walk to the ring, which good on you for that. Actually, I was really impressed, too, though, that it seemed like at this time WWE was trying to use Austin in a somewhat semi-main event role, despite, you know, his status as being the biggest star in the company. Like, they were still putting him in a place where it's like, okay, you're in a position to be a star on the show and to be a draw, but you're not the star and not the draw. Because, you know, they tried to build up Jericho at the time. 2001, they tried to build up Benoit a little bit. I mean, they were trying to expand some of their stars, and at this point, you could see that with the split and everything, Austin was kind of taking a back seat to the people that would, you know, that we're going to see throughout this era, you know, when Austin's running around on a four-wheeler.
Yeah.
So... I mean, it didn't turn out so well for him, but I enjoyed it, and I say that as a huge fan of Steve Austin. And JR actually did a really great job with continuity in this match, talking about how Austin has lost the title several times as a direct result of The Undertaker. So, that's something that, you know, kind of actually took me by surprise, because I guess it's something I'm not really used to anymore. But what did you, because this match, this was fucking weird. It was slow-paced. It, like, was all over the map. They did chain wrestling. They did brawling. We got our typical fucking outside-the-ring bullshit. There was an X-Pac sucks chant because at one point, the Scott Hall that X-Pac just sort of meandered out to the ring.
Yeah, what was the deal with that?
Nothing. Like they were a non-factor in this match.
Like the just kind of showed up.
Well, like, it'll play into next month somewhat. Well, into the next month's pay-per-view somewhat. But they were just a non-factor in this match. Like, basically, the only thing they did was show up to, like, get an Xbox Sucks chant. And then, like, they went away again.
Well,
yeah, was there anything...
productive.
Yeah, was there anything in particular that stood out to you, really?
The red shoes Flair had on, and I guess that bit at the start where, like, Stone Cold reaches out for, like, a test of strength, and then he just flips Taker off, and Undertaker is really pissed about it.
He's that was like, oh, I can't believe you got me. You fucking asshole.
But, like, what the fuck was up with the finish of this match?
Oh, this was...
Like, what the fuck was that?
The finish was actually my favorite part. Because throughout this match, you know, there was not a whole lot going on. This crowd was super hot, but there wasn't really a lot going on. You had Undertaker, like, not giving a fuck about Austin's neck, just killing him with that apron leg drop, which, dude, you should not have been taking at this point in your career. I'm sorry. Taker, just, he worked weird, like I said, he didn't give a shit about Austin's neck, it seemed like. He just hit insane clotheslines on him.
Yeah.
But then he was working this whole technical thing. And Austin's doing his whole brawling thing. And, like, Flair is counting, like, the slowest pace, like, not really favoring either guy, but at the same time not really counting like a referee should.
Hey, it was really, really terrible.
Yeah, and it was bizarre, though, because we go into this fucking finishing sequence where Flair has already taken two bumps for, like, he's already gotten bumped at least once.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised he wasn't bleeding at this point because he took a fucking chair shot. Like, there was all these, like, low blows, fucking, like, just let me go, like, directly word for word into my notes to describe the chaos with which we were faced here for this finish. Austin throws Taker into Flair, then hits a stunner. He tries to get Flair up because there's obviously no ref, but Taker punches him in the dick. And then he choke slams him for a near fall, which Undertaker follows the Jeff Hardy strategy here where it's like, oh, near fall, time to get a chair. Flair takes it away, so while he's taking it away, Austin punches Taker in the dick. And then Taker's like, well, whatever, fuck you, hits a big boot for a near fall. Austin gets up from the near fall, hits an amazing-looking whiplash spine buster, tries for a stunner, gets shoved into Flair. Austin takes just an awful-looking chair shot. I'm surprised Flair isn't bleeding at this point because he's been hit twice. Taker had been using a Dragon Sleeper at the time. He tries for this. Austin responds just by punching Undertaker in the face and then trying for a Dragon Sleeper of his own. Taker says, nope, dumps Austin into the corner. They both try to use the chair. Neither fucking works out for them. Undertaker gets the pinfall after kicking the chair into Austin's face. Ric Flair, hanging halfway out of the ring, counts the pinfall while Austin's foot's on the rope, 28-03, and Undertaker just reaches over and, like, knocks Austin's foot off, like, you didn't see that shit. So Flair just immediately hauls ass out of here. Austin gets up, he's fucking mad as hell, which I don't blame him, because I was pretty pissed about all this, and I just,
yeah,
like, was watching it. He gives the Undertaker gets in the Undertaker's face, Taker gives him the finger, and Austin's like, okay, gives him a stunner, and then leaves. It was the weirdest, like, fuck, it was a surreal 5 minutes for me.
Yeah, like,
nothing made sense during the finish of this match.
This match was bad, and I've noticed a pattern here, like, every single time, except for WrestleMania 18... that Ric Flair has been involved in an Undertaker match, he's ruined it.
He has.
Like, fucking...
Good job,
Undertaker
Flair.
Versus Rock at, I can't remember which pay-per-view it was, No Way Out, and then this.
This.
Yeah.
Damn it, Flair.
Just,
like, he didn't even need
you,
to be involved in this
Flair.
Match, really.
Like, you always ruin Undertaker, Flair. Just
although
go
Flair...
Away. Stop it.
Flair somewhat redeemed himself on this show, for me. With this backstage segment, because he goes backstage and Coach is like, Mr. Flair, how do you feel about, you know, the end of that? And player's like, I don't know what you're talking about. So coach is like, come here, and he shows him a replay. And, like, you see Flair look directly at Austin's feet on the ropes before he goes down to count the pinfall. But coach goes, what do you have to say, Mr. Flair? And he shoves the mic in Rick's face, and Rick just goes, aw, shit, and walks away. Like, that was it. Aw, shit. Better get out of here. Like, well, nothing was done.
Yeah, Stone Cold Steve Austin would probably be on his way to murder me at that point if I was him.
Yeah, like, I'd be getting the hell out of there, too. We're going to get to the resolution of this at Judgment Day. It's fucking... This story takes a really weird turn in the next few weeks. It's going to be fun, you guys. So, not fun, at least for me, was the next match. Tag team titles on the line. Al Snow and Maven, with Maven's eyebrows, challenging William and Charles with their manager, Ricardo, a.k.a. Rico.
Rico.
Recently introduced. Yeah, I
What
I
was
loved...
Rico's role in all of this?
He was their manager.
Okay, and what was he supposed
to be? Like their business manager.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like, he was like their business manager. You know, like their Paul Heyman. They were Rico guys.
Oh.
Yeah, JR made a comment early on that just kind of... wasn't my favorite thing JR's ever said. Because he goes, he says, Billy and Chuck are missing their favorite show to be here tonight, Queer as Folk. And King's like, what? And then, like, a few minutes later, like, King says something about, it must be embarrassing for these two guys to go to Victoria's Secret and ask, you got this in my size?
Oh, God.
And JR goes, I have no idea about their personal lives. Motherfucker, you just made a joke about them a minute ago.
Don't be trying to take the high road, JR. We're on
to
you.
We're on to your shit, you misogynist. You misogynist homophobe. We're learning all sorts of things about Jim Ross during the last few weeks.
Oh,
he's all right with beating on women as long as they, quote-unquote, have it coming. He'll make jokes about people he suspects are gay. Like, I loved JR until this point. And now I'm really starting to dislike some of him.
There was a great, like, I had to watch this match on its own. And there was this amazing comment on the video that I saw of it. It just said, Billy and Chuck were gay, but good team.
Like, everyone has to preface, like, oh, they were gay.
Yeah,
but
like...
But still, like, no, you know, regardless, still an alright team. One of my favorite things about this match, though, were the Billy and Chuck headbands.
Yeah.
And I want some for us.
Billy and Chuck were gay, but those headbands are pretty cool.
Those headbands were fucking rocking. I would wear a Hawk headband.
Yeah.
I'm not soliciting this from our listeners, but if you love us enough to make those, you would become our new favorite fan. Like, you would overtake the one guy in Germany that listens to us every week.
Alternatively, if the one guy in Germany that listens to this show wants to make those headbands, like, you can come hang out with us. We'll make that happen.
Yeah, like, you can be on the show if you send us those headbands. Like, there's the gambit right there. Make those headbands, get a spot on the show for an episode. Contest? Contest.
Contest.
No one is ever going to respond to this.
Yeah.
I'd be like, fuck those guys. Asking too much of us. They can make their own damn headbands. They live in different parts of the world. Probably won't even pay for shipping. You want a spot on the show? And shipping charges. Actually, one thing, though, I did love, that Billy and Chuck are actually a really good old-school team, but they had this weird spot where Chuck was holding Maven, and Billy just, like, came in and stomped him on the foot and was like, yeah, take that. Yeah. It was a really weird exchange, too, because, like, JR and King didn't give a fuck about this match, and I really didn't either. And they had this weird exchange where King said something about asking JR if it was awkward when his dad walked him to school in Oklahoma because they were in the same grade. And JR said something about he never graduated, he just got too big for the desks. And it was just like, it was just a really odd exchange. Like, these guys were just goofing around. Like, this match doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We got a Rico's gay crowd, chant from the crowd, too. That was just, was not cool with. Come on, guys.
Like, everybody just feels the need to point out that everybody else is gay with this match.
Yeah. And all we want are some bitchin' headbands.
Yeah.
I'm actually becoming more and more convinced in this, like, the further we go with this, that Billy Gunn actually is Dolph Ziggler's dad. Like, it's a shame we only have a few more episodes of Billy Gunn. Because this man does some spectacular selling work in this match.
Yeah.
And we got Maven's dropkick, which, besides his eyebrows, best thing about Maven. Al Snow really was the star for his team. Like, he did this really weird thing where he jumped, like, over the top. Like, he was on the apron, and Billy was, like, bent over, kind of, and, like, Al, like, did a tabletop sort of thing over the top rope and over Billy's back and just immediately ate a super kick.
Yeah, it was a cool spot. I liked it a lot.
It really was cool, but Chuck actually ended up holding Maven for Rico to try to kick him. Rico missed. Maven hit just a spectacular-looking crossbody off the top. Gets the near fall. Maven tries to interfere. He gets chased off by Al Snow, who just fucking chases him away, like,
yeah,
into the crowd. Like, he comes back after it's too late to matter, but...
Like, how did the referee miss Rico's interference here? I mean, his shirt is so fucking bright. You could see that motherfucker from space.
He did not give a shit.
That's a theme with these referees on this show.
Yeah, the refs on this show did not give a fuck. It was just all over the map with what they would call in the show, and yeah. This match, not a lot happened, not a lot of fun. Chuck hits a super kick to Maven for the pinfall, 5 minutes, 58 seconds, just a super dud.
Yeah, it wasn't that good at all.
Like, the best part of this match was Rico.
Yeah, and his shirt.
And his shirt, and the way he handled the crowd.
Yeah.
Because while they're chanting Rico's gay at him, he's just like... he's just very politely addressing them. Like, if you're going to watch this match for any reason, do it for Rico talking to the crowd. This match, yeah, like I said, not good, not fun. And honestly, I liked it more than this next one we're going into.
Yeah.
Main event time. WWF Undisputed Title. Hulk Hogan versus Triple H. This match is happening. Yeah, the young gun and an old lion.
More of this fucking old lion, young lion horse shit. I'm already tired of this. Like, let me ask you a question. Are they gonna do this old lion, young lion bullshit with every single match Hogan has where he's facing someone younger than him?
Oh, well, you only have a couple more matches with Hogan to worry about here, my friend.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, We've got, I believe, 2 more appearances of the Hulkster on pay-per-view in 2002. And then we'll have a couple in 2003. And then this lovely Mr. American fellow pops up.
Oh, okay.
You'll like him. He's great, brother. He's a real young lion. Real young lion. So, yeah, this match is happening because Vince is like, I don't let the people tell me what to do. They don't know what they like. I know what they like better. But they can have Hogan versus Triple H. That can happen.
Yeah.
Like, that was basically it. And Hogan claims to have pressed Andre over his head, which, no, you didn't. Stop lying. He thinks this match is going to be bigger than WrestleMania 3 and WrestleMania 18, which begs the question, are you high, Hulk? And
he's been taking his vitamins.
Somebody's vitamins.
Yeah.
It was a weird video package, but they made up for it with Voodoo Child. Like, I'm sorry, guys. Like, this is going to make a lot of people feel really old, or it's going to piss off a lot of purists, maybe. I don't know. But I love this version of Hulk Hogan. Kind of because it's like a face version of the NWO Hulkster, which is who he was when I became a full-time fan. So, like, seeing, you know, the red and the yellow, and hearing Voodoo Child, you know, and just this incarnation of the Hulkster is kind of just a combination of all of the different versions that I grew up with. So I can't help but have a soft spot for him. But it doesn't recover this match.
Yeah. One thing that I found weird was, I mean, they've got the new Undisputed Championship belt at this point, but they're still using the two belt graphic.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what?
It was... Kevin Dunn was not on top of things that night. Yeah, not on top of things either was JR during this match, because he busted out the line saying that Triple H is one of the greatest mat wrestlers of all time, which begs the question, are you high, JR?
I think everybody was high on this show. The referees, fucking Maven and Al Snow, the commentary team, just everybody.
Everyone except
RVD
Kurt Angle.
Was definitely high. Yeah, Kurt Angle, he drank milk and stuff, but everybody
yeah.
else, they were just high.
Exactly. This match was just a lot of just atmosphere and show off and just not a lot of technical action from Hogan.
Yeah.
Triple H was working a really aggressive, you know, technical style where he was just going after Hogan's legs, which honestly, some of my favorite parts of this match were just spots where Triple H was going after Hogan's legs and Hogan was just yelling.
Yeah.
Because like
God.
What were you saying?
That's basically all this match was. Like, Triple H attacked Hogan's leg, and JR was like, oh my god, he's gonna end his career and shit like that. And then there was some run-ins, and then the show ended.
Yeah.
Like, Hogan's the champ or something, I guess? Yay?
Yeah. Like just, I'm gonna recap these last few minutes of this show, because, like, a lot of stuff happened in a hurry, and honestly, the last few minutes of this match were my favorite part. We had Triple H working Hogan's knee on the leg post, because the story was that Hogan's knee was in bad shape. Triple H was trying to weaken it, because obviously, Hogan's not going to be able to do his finishing stuff without his leg.
Mm-hmm.
Solid logic. So Triple H is working his knee around the post, and he's just like, Hogan just sits up and yells immediately, like, directly into the camera, oh God! So they work back into the ring. Triple H gets Hogan in a basic, you know, leg lock, you know, laying into the crook of the knee, pulling it up.
Mm-hmm.
And, referee Earl Hebner's like, do you give, Hogan? Do you give? And Hogan's, like, grabbing at Triple H's hair and, like, pulling on it. And Hebner's, like, just keeps slapping his hand away, like, no, stop that. So, like, he asks Hogan if he gives up. He's like, he's trying to break my leg. Like...
Well, yeah, it's a wrestling match.
What else did you expect, Hogan? So we get, like, after this just long, like, all of the leg submission spots in this match were fucking long.
Yeah,
it was a lot of rest. Whoever thought that putting these guys out here this long with Hogan kind of being in the twilight of his career, bad fucking idea. But we do get some gold in the finish. Because Triple H at some point in this match decided, fuck it, I'm going to work heel. So he gets Hogan in a figure four. He uses the ropes for leverage. And then, like, Hogan does the counter for the figure four, which is, well, I'm just going to roll over, which I never understood how that fucks up the leverage of the move, but I guess it does.
Yeah.
They break the hold. Triple H gets Hogan in a sleeper, which Triple H, obviously a student of the game, remember Starrcade 96, where Roddy Piper beat Hogan with a sleeper hold? That's right. Somebody once beat somebody with a sleeper hold, and the match finished when the ref dropped the hand three times. There's a minor bit of knowledge for you that I'm sure, like, three people know. It just broke down into fucking chaos from here, though. Because, like, Hogan started a little comeback, and, like, you could tell the crowd thought that this was a Hulk up. And, like, they were disappointed because, like, Hogan hit the big boot, and he hit the leg drop, and Chris Jericho comes out and just pulls Earl Hebner out of the ring, fucking knocks him out, and then he gets to the ring, and Hogan sticks his head through the ropes, and Jericho just blasts him right in the head with a chair.
Yeah.
He tries to help Triple H get the win here. He tries to revive Hebner, and Triple H... returns the favor with a clothesline over the top rope. Like, see you later, Jericho. Piss off.
Thanks for helping me win the match, jerk.
Dickhead. So we actually do get the Hulk up spot, though, but Hogan misses the leg drop. So Triple H hits a pedigree for the near fall, which is only stopped when the Undertaker comes, like, running out to the ring. And it's great, too, because you don't see the Undertaker until about a half second before he hits the ring. So, like, it's just a really quick cut, and you see the Undertaker running, and then, like, it cuts back to a wide shot, and he just punches Earl Hebner right in the face through the ropes. So he grabs the chair that Jericho had brought out with him. He took Triple H out with him. Hogan hulks up on Taker, like, out of nowhere, because Hogan is out at this point from the pedigree.
Yeah.
So Undertaker drags Hogan over to puts him on top of Triple H, which just immediately activates a Hulk up somehow. Like, Triple H was a power-up for Hogan at this point.
Yeah.
And so he hulks up on Undertaker, finishes the sequence with a leg drop on Triple H for the pinfall. We got a new champion in 22 minutes and 4 seconds. Hogan celebrates to end it. And, like, that was the end of, like, you see Hogan with the title, and then, boom, logo, and that's the end of the show.
Entertainment.
Which they were still a federation.
Oh, okay.
So, well, I mean, that wraps up the pay-per-view review. Asher, what do you think for MVP for the night?
For MVP, I got Kurt Angle.
Oh, no doubt. Angle was just like, I almost think it's a tie between Angle and Edge, because both put in so much effort in this match.
Yeah, it's a like, big moment, too, because, like, every other week, it's been Undertaker.
Yeah. I told you it was going to be the end of the streak, man.
Yeah.
Undertaker went 4-0. Now he's 4-1. That's what happens when you let Ric Flair and his red shoes get involved.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, though, I had Flair for least valuable just because I really disliked his involvement in that match.
I had, like, Maven, because fuck Maven.
Because he just contributed nothing?
Because Maven.
Because Maven. All right.
Maven, yeah, and his eyebrows.
So I'd say match of the night easily for both of us, Angle and Edge.
Definitely. Honorable
Far
mention
and away.
To Jerry and Billy Kidman, though.
And honorable mention to RVD and Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
Seriously, guys, those three matches from this show were all excellent. And I think they really get overlooked just because of the last hour or so of the show.
Yeah.
But what would you say for the worst match of the night?
Honestly, this kind of hurts to say, but Undertaker versus Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, that one was, it was, like, as not, like, because the tag title match wasn't as enjoyable as some of the other stuff on this card. But it didn't last long enough to really be a burden like Austin and Undertaker did, and much like the main event did.
Yeah, Austin Undertaker went for, like, half an hour.
Yeah.
Half an hour of, like, weird technical spots and fucking
brawling,
like, slow counts and Ric Flair and his red fucking shoes.
My favorite thing from that whole match, though, was Austin working on the Undertaker's arm early on in a hammerlock, and he just looks over at Ric Flair and goes, "Woo!" Highlight by far.
Yeah.
So, out of 10, what do you give this one, Asher?
I'm going to give this one a 6. There was some good stuff, but the last hour really dragged.
Definitely. I actually have a 6 for it as well. But next week, we're actually, we're doing the draft show this weekend.
Yep.
So be on the lookout for that. Bonus episode number 1. And then next week, we're actually going just a little bit outside of, I guess you could say, the canon of our timeline here. But we're going to be reviewing Insurrection 2002, which was held May 4th, 2002, from the Wembley Arena in London. It was headlined by Triple H versus The Undertaker for the main event, because Hogan wasn't going to England, brother.
Brother.
Austin versus The Big Show. And it has the distinction of actually being the last ever show that they promoted under the WWF banner, and the first release, I guess, commercially, under the WWE banner.
Oh. Okay.
So we're actually going to be going to London next week instead of going to our Judgment Day review. Judgment Day will be the week after, but we're covering all our bases here, guys.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for us just about this week. You can follow us at Ruthless Podcast on Twitter. you can follow Asher in his neighborhood if you can find out where he lives, because the man does nothing online except this. Is there anything you want to promote? Book signings, meet and greets. You're not going to meet the fans out there, Asher?
If we have any Australian fans, hit us up on Twitter and maybe we can work something out.
You're in high demand now, damn it. They love you in Hungary.
Well, yeah, but Hungary is in Hungary and I'm in Australia, so.
That's true. Still, we can promote the meet and greets. We can do it, you guys. We can do it. We can make the dream happen. All right, so we're going to go ahead and get out of here for the week then. Since you've got everything you want to follow, unless you want to follow me at Hawk Jefferson, obviously if you're listening to us, you know the website, ruthlessaggressionpodcast.blogspot.com. We'll plug the Twitter one more time, at Ruthless Podcast, because there's a chance you'll just get a random tweet from this guy if you follow us. I mean, that ought to be incentive enough. But we'll see you guys next week with Insurrection 2002. Wrap.
Yay.
I felt like that was a pretty decent show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're really starting to hit our groove.
Yeah, it's been pretty good.